Welcome to The Source. I'm David Martin Davies. 250 years ago, the Industrial Revolution changed the world, and now some argue a robotic revolution is coming as well. Economists like David Autour at MIT predict jobs with routine tasks like bank tellers, waiters, and secretaries are vulnerable right now to automation. Apparently, so are radio hosts.
And I, for one, welcome our new robotic overlords. That was the computerized David Martin Davies, host of The Source. And who knows, a computer might one day take this job and other jobs and your jobs. Computers are getting faster and more powerful every day. Computers, they're the brains for robots. So how far are we from having an army of droid workers do everything for us? MIT's Eric Brynjolfsson has written about that with his colleague Andrew McAfee in the New York Times bestseller, The Second Mechanical Age, Work, Progress, and Prosperity in a Time of Brilliant Technologies. So, Eric, welcome to The Source.
One little thing, it's the second machine age. I'm not sure your robot intro would have made that same mistake.
This
mechanical age.
Oh, yeah, second machine age. Yes, okay. Yeah. Sorry about that. And so, should I be replaced by a robot? Is that coming? Is that possible?
Well, I was going to say no until that little flip mistake there. I don't know. Now I'm not so sure. But seriously, I think it's a ways off before radio hosts will be replaced. Although the closest I have to that is that there are sports writers copywriters for financial journals that are being replaced. There are machines that will write simple sports stories based on box scores, financial earnings reports, and one I just saw being developed is earthquake reports. So, they're getting there.
Yeah, so there was a recent shaker, quake in the West Coast, and the LA Times had an algorithm that was able to kick out a story almost immediately based off of the data they were able to get from the U.S. Geological Survey, put a story out right away saying the magnitude and location and some of the hard data about that, and they were first with that story.
Exactly, they're fast, and there's some things we do that are pretty close to sort of pre-scripted. We just got to fill in the details, and that's one of them.
Well, I'm worried about Watson, the computer that won on Jeopardy, and Watson seems capable of doing lots of things that many people do, like answer the phones or take people's orders through a drive-through restaurant, or maybe be talk show host.
Well, Watson's a great example of what's different with the second machine age, because it used to be they just handled very structured tasks, but Watson handles all sorts of unstructured tasks in many different domains. We had it come to MIT, and we had a little contest between three of our best MIT students. We got three students from Harvard, and all of them played against Watson. And you probably won't be surprised, knowing what you know, that Watson beat them all. And it actually won on a sports question about Boston sports, so that was kind of embarrassing.
But, we're just looking at Watson as a novelty, playing talk show, playing on Jeopardy and quiz shows and that type of stuff. But what we're talking about is labor in the future and Watson taking people's jobs. And is that coming?
In some jobs, for sure. I mean, technology's always been destroying jobs. It's always been creating jobs. And Watson is doing both as well. It wasn't designed just to win $75,000 on Jeopardy, which it did very well, but the same basic technology is being used to help with medical diagnoses, legal opinions, call centers. You mentioned that. There's a lot of questions being answered in call centers, handling all sorts of unstructured tasks like that, and it's doing a pretty good job. I've been meeting with the team and really impressed. Now, there's other people who are getting jobs as they learn how to create tools like Watson, but right now the balance, I have to say, has been that over the past decade we have not been keeping up with the job creation. The share of people working, we call it the employment to population ratio, has been falling. It was falling even before the Great Recession, and it hasn't really been recovering even after the Great Recession. As you may know, that although the unemployment rate isn't as bad as it was, much of that is improvement. It's just that people are dropping out of the labor force, so they're not even counted as unemployed anymore.
And the Google self-driving car, and there's going to be other self-driving cars out there right now, but Google has been on the cutting edge. of having vehicles, being able to navigate the streets and drive around without a driver at the wheel. Of course, there has to be a driver at the wheel to meet the requirements of the law, but it's capable of doing it on its own. So what's going to happen when they perfect that? We no longer need taxi drivers and truck drivers.
Yeah, I think that's happening sooner than even I predicted. I have to confess that I taught a class at MIT about 10 years ago, and we were talking about, kind of like you and I are talking right now, things machines can do well and they can't do well. And I put out there as driving a car is something that no machine would be able to do anytime soon, because I thought there's just too much unstructured information. You know, there's no set rule of what you're supposed to do, especially in Boston. And I was proven wrong. You know, last summer I was riding down Route 101 in California in a driverless car, and it was a kind of a thrilling experience to be part of that revolution. It's happening a lot faster, and there are about 6 million jobs that will be affected directly by that, and who knows what other kinds of changes will be in the economy as people figure out new delivery models and parking lots change and suburbs.
It's going to be definitely revolutionary. It's going to change everything that we imagine about the way cities are and the way that we use transportation. Our phone number is 614-8980, 614-8980, if you want to join the conversation talking about this new, the second machine age, title of the book, Work, Progress, and Prosperity in a Time of Brilliant Technologies. So I think back to the first machine age, the first industrial revolution, and we had the followers of Ned Ludd, the people who would smash frames around 1812, that where they objected to all of these new looms that were taking away their jobs.
Right. Exactly. It was just about 200 years ago in that first machine age. And back then, of course, it was mostly replacing physical labor and our muscles. And now that the second machine age, it's cognitive work, mental work that's being affected. And, you know, we haven't quite seen people smashing machines to the same extent, but I was out in San Francisco and there were people throwing rocks at the Google buses because of some of the inequality that is resulting in this new era. And a lot of people who used to have reliable jobs are finding that they've been automated away.
Yeah, well, isn't that Google bus situation is because Google is, you know, shuttling people around. They're treating them great if they work on the Google campus. But if San Francisco is going through this ultra hyper gentrification where people are being pushed out of the city who had been there for so long.
Right. I mean, one of the things that technology does is it changes around the demand for different kinds of labor. It makes some kinds of labor more valuable and other kinds of labor less valuable or even obsolete. You know, the extreme version of that was with the Luddites, where the people who did the spinning, you know, weaving work were no longer needed. And today we're having a bunch of job categories also being automated. People who do routine information processing work are finding that the demand for their labor is going down. People who do things like bookkeeping or bank tellers or tax preparers or travel agents, these are categories where technology is automating more and more of those tasks, and it shows up in two ways. One is with just fewer jobs, period, but the other way that's a little subtler but is more pervasive is lower wages.
Listen, Eric, I got to take a quick break. We're going to continue this conversation talking about these robots taking jobs and the evolution was happening with the second machine age. This is The Source on KSTX, and we will be right back.
Well, technology in general will make capital more attractive than labor over time. Software substitution, you know, whether it's for drivers or waiters or nurses or even, you know, whatever is you do.
That's right. We wonder that too.
It's progressing. And that's going to force us to rethink how these tax structures work in order to maximize employment, given that, capitalism in general over time will create more inequality, and technology over time will reduce demand for jobs, particularly at the lower end of the skill set. And so, we have to adjust, and these things are coming fast. 20 years from now, labor demand for lots of skill sets will be substantially lowered, and I don't think people have that in their mental model.
And that is Bill Gates, the founder of Microsoft, the richest man in the world. We're talking about this new age, the second machine age, work progress and prosperity in a time of brilliant technologies. That's the name of the book. The author is Erik Brynjolfsson. He is also with MIT. So before we were talking about all the changes that are coming and how fast computers are getting and how jobs are being taken away. Now we can talk about a little bit more about what this means economically and what's going to happen to the workforce. We invite our callers to jump in on this. The number is 614-8980, 614-8980. Are you concerned about a robot taking your job? And so, Erik, I think about Rome. Rome, not a lot of big technologies in Rome, but they had a lot of slave labor there. Mm-hmm. And the freemen of Rome, if you were not of the upper class of Rome, you really were impoverished because you couldn't find work because there was so much slave labor around. And I see that as a parallel to where maybe we might be approaching, as there's so much computer and robot labor that's going to be taking middle class jobs.
Yeah, I think that it's interesting to look at some of those historical analogies. Probably there's been no worse time in history to be a person with just ordinary skills in terms of what's happening, how rapidly some of the wages are falling. There's been no better time to be a talented entrepreneur, like we heard from Bill Gates there a minute ago. Actually, I had a chance to talk about this just last week, so it's a coincidence that you had him on. We were chatting, and I think he's exactly right, that we do have this trend towards growing inequality, and a lot of that is being driven, not all of it, but a lot of it's being driven by the way technology is automating work, and today's free men and women, you know, don't necessarily compete against human slaves. They compete against robots and other machines. But ultimately, this doesn't have to be bad news. There are things we can do to have people learn new skills that aren't directly competitive with robots. There are also things we can do in terms of who, you know, in the longer run, who's going to own all the robots and how are we going to divide up that bounty that's going to be created. You could imagine a slightly different version. In fact, Andy and I call it the digital Athens. I don't know why we picked Athens instead of Rome, but it's a world where people have machine slaves that take care of their basic food, clothing, and other needs, and they have time to, you know, indulge in you know, philosophical discussions.
Debate. I think because you picked Athens because you were very optimistic. If you picked Rome, yeah, People would be engaged in watching the gladiators and debauchery.
Yeah. No, that is true, and there may be some of that too. You know, bread and circus, as one of the Roman emperors put it, is a way to keep people amused and entertained. And we have a lot of control and a lot of decisions to make about what kind of future we want to live in. One thing I want to emphasize from the book is that these sort of dismal futures or these more optimistic futures, none of them are inevitable. It's going to depend very much on some of the choices we make as a society in terms of how the technology plays out. It is inevitable that the technology will become more powerful and that there will be a lot of wealth created and a lot of jobs eliminated. It's not inevitable how we decide to cope with that change.
Well, you're going to have worker displacement.
Yes.
People who had jobs will no longer have jobs. And you're going to have a contraction of the workforce. And so what happens to the people who are going to be displaced? The truck driver who's found out that a little box is going to drive his truck.
Right. Well, in the short to medium run, I think there's a lot we can do to find new jobs, to create new jobs. Remember, almost 90% of Americans used to work on the farms, and now it's less than 2%. They didn't all simply become unemployed. They were reskilled. One of the best ideas America ever had was mass public education, first at primary level and then high school and even the GI Bill. We haven't been leading the world in education the way we used to in the 19th and 20th century, so we can redouble our efforts there. The other thing that changed that helped create jobs was there's a flurry of entrepreneurship. People like Henry Ford and, yes, Bill Gates, who we just heard from, invented entirely new industries that farmers in the 1800s couldn't have even imagined. and those employed millions of people.
Right, but as Henry Ford was working towards assembly line and as much automation as he could get going, he paid his people very well because he realized that they were consumers. So if people
right.
can't have jobs, then they can't buy things, and then you don't need robots to make those things that can't be bought.
That's right. And so you need the combination of having a skilled workforce and entrepreneurs who create jobs, not just any old jobs, create good jobs. It doesn't help to have create jobs that don't pay a living wage. So that's what's worked in the past. I have to confess, it's a lot harder this time. The second machine age is rushing at us a lot faster than the first machine age did. It's affecting a lot more kinds of tasks. So the hurdle rate is a lot higher than it used to be. And we have a big challenge ahead of us, and that starts with changing the conversation, like you're doing in this radio show, to get people thinking about these issues.
Right. So you bring up how people during the Industrial Revolution, and then we industrialized agriculture, and people were basically thrown off the farm, and they flooded the cities looking for work, and we saw it wasn't that great of a situation. It was a generation of people who were in these cities, and it was kind of a very dark age.
Well, you know, I don't want to paint too dark a brush at it. There were certainly, you know,
well, looking at Upton Sinclair and up that type of.
There were definitely some tough times. But let's bear in mind that we're about a dozen times wealthier than people were in those days. Wealth has income has been growing about 2% per year for almost 200 years, doubling and redoubling.
You call that in your book the spread. There's the bounty and the spread. And so there's
exactly
a lot of bounty, but it's not spread out, distributed very well.
Yeah, that's the problem we're facing, is that the overall pie is bigger than it's ever been. We're at record profits, record productivity, record wealth, $80 trillion I just saw. But we also have lower median income, more unemployment, and a small share of people working. And that paradox reflects the fact that technology, while it makes the pie bigger, it doesn't automatically help everybody. We have to have the complementary changes in our skills and our organizations, our laws, to keep up with the technology.
Yeah, so the question is, what's our future going to look like as we have this second machine age? Are we going to have a Star Trek future where we're able to do so much and think and create and explore with this new tech? Are we going to live in I can't pronounce the movie, Asylum, the dark, the dystopian future?
Right. The technology of those futures is very similar. We'll definitely have those technologies. The way we organize work, the way we distribute wealth, the way people participate is very different. And that's not a technology question. That's a choice of our values and how we organize ourselves. We have to think about what we want for our values, and we have to put the investments in education, in boosting entrepreneurship, in tax policy, in growth policy, if we want to achieve one of those happier outcomes. I think it's very achievable, but it's certainly not guaranteed. It's easy to see a scenario where inequality keeps growing and fewer people share in the bounty.
And back to the Luddites, and we have, I guess, the Nuevo Luddites, next generation of Luddites. They have political power, and they could vote. And if they find themselves
right.
out of jobs, could they vote and to try to rein in some of this technology?
Well, there's two types of solutions, and one of them works and one of them doesn't. The idea of trying to stop the technology, rein in the technology, that's ultimately a losing strategy. We're not going to hold back technology. We wouldn't want to even if we could, because it does create the bounty. What we can do instead is respond to the technology with new skills and inventing new industries and with income redistribution. If we do that, then we can have both the bounty and also have shared prosperity. But it would be a mistake to try to pull back to technology to protect the future, to protect the past from the future. It never works.
And so for our smart listeners who are tuning in and are wondering what's going to happen to them, where do you want to be on the break point of being useful or obsolete in the future? What skills are out there?
Well, I can give some advice. I mean, you want to do things almost by definition that machines can't do. And those are things like creativity. Also, there's a lot of emotional connection that people have, whether it's motivating people in sales or caring for people and nurturing people, leadership. Those are things that machines aren't very good at. A third category is dexterity. Right now, machines are not very good at, you know, whether it's gardening or cooking or taking care of the elderly or little kids. These are all things that require physical skills that machines don't have. Those three categories are relatively immune or even going to benefit in the machine age. What you don't want to do is be doing routine information processing tasks that Watson and other technologies are getting better and better at.
Paperwork stuff.
Paperwork stuff. And you have to be ready to be constantly changing your skills, too. You know, the days where you could get an education and then sit back for 40 years on a career, you know, those are gone because machines are improving faster and faster. That means we have to constantly be adapting.
Right. I always tell people that the best skill you could have is the skill to keep learning. That's how you're going to stay on top of things.
Yeah, all right.
I want to thank you, Eric, so much for joining us. Your book, The Second Machine Age, Work Progress and Prosperity in a Time of Brilliant Technologies. This is the future. It's coming whether we want it or not. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's been a pleasure.
So this is Source on KSTX. Thanks for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. David Martin Davies is executive producer and host. Paul Flav is the show's producer. Management and oversight comes from VP of Programming Wayne Coble. Chris Udaly is the TPR web editor. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.